A passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Dr. Kevin Show here on OM Time. And this week, I'm excited to both be pairing up with one of my favorite other set of pairs, Lori Powers Otto, as we, the last Thursday of the month, as always, double team some poor unsuspecting. I mean, we have a guest on, right, Lori?
Yes. Yes.
So anyways, but before we bring in tonight's guest and, make sure that we have battened down the hatches and hidden all the good jewelry, I want to find out, how are you doing?
Sorry, you have me laughing hysterically already. This is going to be a great show. I am doing that. How about yourself, Dr. Kevin? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderfully well. I just got back from 5 days on Lake Champlain, spending time with my husband and the mother-in-law and sister-in-law. And, four of us went up and four of us came back, so I didn't have to hide any bodies. So that's good.
Always good. Always good.
That was a little bit of a challenge. There was a couple of times I thought maybe there was a rock looked big enough to hide one under, but I didn't. I behaved. I also want to take a moment because I know once we have opened the barn door on this guest, it will be nonstop until we get the ding of the show. So I do want to remind, first of all, people, this is a live call-in show. So if you think you can get a word in edgewise, please call in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. And feel free to ask your questions of any kind. Just please remember, we do ask that the questions be respectful, or I will hang it up on you. But outside of that, we're a pleasant and loving and welcoming show. And I also want to mention, August 8th, Lori and I will be at an event together. We will be at the opening of Lion's Gate, which is a spiritual health and wellness center opening up in Westboro, Mass. We are going to be there. There's going to be a crystal show. Lori and I will both be offering readings. I'm going to be interviewing some of the upcoming teachers and readers to share about their upcoming classes at Lionsgate. I'll be talking a little bit about what I'll be doing there. But that is Lionsgate, and it's lionsgatespiritual.com, who is helping us host tonight's show. And come see us there. And Lori, I'm excited, and I need to catch you off air fairly soon to run a couple things by you, but we're going to move on with the show, unless you have anything else that you would like to share or bring up.
I just want to say I'm super, super, super excited for this. The grand opening of Lion's Gate on the Lion's Gate. Oh, come on. This is awesome. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
I'll leave the singing to you. Trust me, no one wants to hear that.
I don't know. So I'm going to give you the, would you like to introduce tonight's guest? He'll probably get a better introduction that way, or I'll be happy to do it.
Well, I mean, you know him. I'm just meeting him for the first time. But I am super, super, super excited to have Paul on. So, I think you should probably introduce him since you actually know him.
We're not making any biblical references here, just so everybody knows.
No,
not at all. So anyways, it is my pleasure and my joy to introduce to you, and just before the show, he reminded me that we are coming up to the 40th anniversary of our first meeting.
We met
40 years ago on July 31st. We were both in the netherworld. Neither one of us had been born yet, but we were floating around, and we attended this fabulous party with Shakespeare and, you know, Willa Cather and all of the other greats that we were out hanging up with before we got stuck in this life, because neither one of us has passed 29, right?
Right.
Just say yes. But anyways, so I have known Paul for 40 years, and Paul is a dynamic, charming, intelligent, witty, very, very, very talented performer. You know, he plays the ivories. He plays the ebonies. Paul and Michael would be nowhere without him. But he's here today to talk about his third book, though I'm sure we can get him to, you know, maybe make some comments from his first two books. His first book was That a Name I Dropped? But the book that we're going to be focusing on is his most recently released, A Sprinkling of Stardust, Over the Outhouse. And if there's anybody that knows about outhouses, it's Paul. Paul also has had his own show on Concord TV. And I'm trying to see if I can find it quickly, and I'm not going to find it. So, Paul, you're going to have to fill in the name of your show, which you're supposed to be having me on, and I am going to hold you to that. What is the name of your show in Concord, Paul?
Capital Area Chats, CAC, CAC. The noise people make when they have a phlegm in their throat.
So, without further ado, we want to welcome to the stage the one and only late Paul Brogan. Paul Brogan.
Thank you. I've never heard such an introduction. And Kevin, I never heard so many wonderful things out of you regarding me. So I will treasure that forever in case it never happens again. But I will return the favor in September when I do have you on Capital Area Chats up here at Concord TV. And I will try to one-up you by maybe saying a few other things and having a special song played as your intro.
I know what the song's going to be. Lori, you want to catch this episode.
I'll make it available to you afterwards, unless you're, too embarrassed by what we talk about and decide that you don't want it to ever see the light of day. But it's very exciting to be on with you. I mean, truly, it's wonderful. And serious, in all seriousness, I have followed you, not stalked you, but followed you. Through the years with all of the amazing things you're doing, and you've written books, so you know better than many people that have talked with me about the book, the ins and outs of actually getting a book to publication and the satisfaction afterwards. And this is the third book, so either three strikes and I'm out, or the third time is the charm. So we'll have to wait and see what, you know, comes from this.
Oh, honey, you've been out longer than most of our audience have been alive.
Please. That's true. Yes, it's true. It's true. I mean, it says on the book jacket, after coming out when I was 10. And I was 10 almost 15 years ago. So it has been.
I thought it said you came out in 1910.
Yes, I was on the back of a horse-drawn streetcar going through the streets of Concord, and I was singing After the Ball is Over, After the Break of Dawn, because I'd been up all night. And so, yes, that's when I officially came out
So you were the original singing capon.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. Anyway, so yes, I did. Oh, you've read the book, so I don't have to. I don't have to go into detail about that. But
No. I want you to. So tell us. I would like to hear about the three books and what is the thread that made you feel as if you were called to put this out to the world.
Okay. Well, the first book was that a name I dropped. Alan, my spouse, kept telling me, okay, I've heard so many amazing stories from you and about you from other people. And he said, you need to write it down. He said, you're not going to live forever. And I thought, and this is 12 years ago, and I'm thinking, I'm not? Is there something I don't know? So I immediately sat down and started to peck away at the computer, that is, not at poor Alan, and because he's not henpecked. So anyway, I enjoyed the experience of writing because more than I had thought I would, but I ended up with 700 and something pages, and you know me, I'm long-winded. We're not going to talk about passing wind, but long-winded. Anyway, so it was very successful. In fact, it did far better than I ever thought. The only issue was I was never completely happy with it because I was rushed to get it done by my publisher, and they said that, oh, no, you got to get it. It was supposed to be out at Christmas time, and suddenly in April they said to me, we've decided we want the book to be out for the summer reading crowd. And I said, but it needs editing, it needs this and that, but don't worry about it, we're going to just release it. So I was never completely happy, and I, you know, it took me, that was in 2011, and it took me until 2019 to have my second book out, and that was The Concord Theater and Concord's Love Affair with the Movies. And you probably remember that, you know, for many, many years, I was associated with the theater on Main Street, and it was a story that needed to be told. She was the only woman to run a first-run independent movie theater for more than 60 years. I mean, nobody else has done that. Second-run theaters, there was a Mrs. Merchant in Manchester and things like that, but not a first-run movie theater run by a woman competing with movie chains and everything else. So I thought the story needed to be told. And so I did, and I spent a lot of time researching it to make sure it was correct. And boom, it happened. And it did very, very well. And I was very, very pleased with that because it was a tribute to Teresa Canton, who owned the theater. And I thought that she was always passed over. When they talked about people in Concord that made a difference through the years, they never talked about her. She entertained her theater from 1933 to 1994, entertained, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that came through Concord or lived in Concord. And I thought that, you know, people needed to know the story behind the theater. So after that, I was starting work on another book called The Park, and it was going to be a murder mystery. And I'd never written a murder mystery, and I thought I need to step out of my comfort zone of true stories and write something that really stretches me as a writer stretches me. So I just want to emphasize that importance of that. So The Park is set in White's Park here in Concord that I grew up around and all of that. And a series of killings occur in the park through the years. And there are real people in the book, although it's a fictional murders, a series of murders. And then the pandemic struck, and I couldn't go and spend hours and hours at the Concord Public Library going back and researching all of the old Concord Monitors, the local paper, to get accurate pieces of information since the book takes place in 1962. So I would need to make sure I had accurate information in there. So not being able to do that for almost 2 years, I said, well, I'm not going to sit around and pout. I was teaching film classes for the Ollie program on Zoom, but the best thing about doing that is you can adjust the lighting and everything and make yourself look 25 years old. You know, so the students are seeing me as this fresh-faced young blabbermouth teaching these classes. But I also,
they have that much gauze available on Zoom?
They filmed me through a Navajo blanket, actually. We were going to use Vaseline, but for some reason during the pandemic, all the Vaseline in town was gone. So, anyway.
In your case, they could have used Crisco, but go ahead.
So, anyway. So, wow. This is really going to get hot and heavy. So, anyway, I wanted to do something with writing. I do my blogs for Concord Patch and, you know, that kind of thing. But I said, this is the time to redo that first book the way I wanted it to be done if I'd had the time to do it. And I was looking at it from a different perspective. Just life experiences make you look at yourself maybe in a more harsh way, because I knew, okay, I can't paint myself out as, you know, the perfect golden boy or anything. I've got to make sure people know about the, you know, different things. So I started working on that, and that just 1,275 hours later, there it was. And I didn't want to just title it like the first one, because it's so different in so many ways. And so I said, what do I want to call it? I want something catchy, not like the flu, but when you're not a household name like a John Grisham or somebody like that, you need to have a title that will get somebody in the bookstore to pick it up, to at least read it, the back part, and say, oh, I'd like to know more about this person, or, oh, my God, he's one of those. So, you know, you want to make sure that it's something catchy, and that was sort of something I tossed around, and I can't use some of the words I was pondering on your show, because this is a, you know, serious interview, but you know what we put into an outhouse. And so all of us in life, people use the expression happens when, you know, something occurs. And it does. None of us escape having happen. So I basically said, well, when this does happen, you can wallow in it and be miserable and bitter and, you know, spin your wheels, or you can put it where it belongs in the outhouse and sprinkle a little stardust over it to make it smell prettier and move on to the next thing. And so that's why that title. Now I'm back to working on the park, the mystery, but it was the right time to do it. And I felt that, you know, it was a good experience to revisit some things and to be really hard on yourself. And unfortunately, Dr. Kevin, you did not end up in the final cut, but you will be in the book after the park. I had written a chapter about us, and then I said, well, okay, I need to, they told me I needed to keep it to about 400 pages. They said, you're verging on having another epic like the Thornbirds, and that, you know, and we all know that nobody wants to read 600 or 700 pages of Paul Brogan.
Well, that's true. But I love the name. I thought that it was a really good name. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's right up there. You know, as soon as I saw the name, I thought of that old commercial. What is it? VD is for everyone. Yeah, that one.
That one, yes, of course. Yeah. I often find myself humming that. Yes.
Yes, you know, catchy, yeah. Like an STD.
Lori, I have to tell you, around Kevin, it is impossible not to burst into song. We made a trip, let's see, in August of of 1982. He had to go up to Portland, Maine to pick up some things. And
Hold on. Our sound is coming in. We're going on break. They're not hearing us anymore. We'll be right back with Paul Brogan.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. Remember, we are a live call-in show, so you can call in at 202-570-7057. You can be part of the conversation, or you can let the parade pass you by.
There's a song cue, but as I was
before
saying,
that happened.
Yes. I just had, we made a trip in August of 1982 up to Portland. You had to retrieve some things from a place you were living. And it was the fastest trip to Portland, Maine, I have ever been on, because we started singing show tunes when we left, and we were still singing them when we came back, and our voices were not hoarse. We didn't sound like B. Arthur singing. And the high point, of course, was singing all the songs from Chicago, because you knew the show like the back of your hand and absolutely loved the show. And we went through, I think, the entire score of that. But, I mean, there was absolutely no show that was left unscathed by us. But we were happy. My God, we were just... It was a magical, and I always look back on that. That is the only time that I have ever traveled. It must have been 90 miles each way on a wing in a song, because I don't think there was a dull moment on the entire trip. And that's, anyway, Lori, that's how being around Kevin is, because so many things trigger an immediate song cue that it is just astounding. His wealth of knowledge around music and around Broadway and musical films, etc., is really, I've never met anyone that had that kind of a library up there in his head. And I wonder sometimes, how is there room for anything else? Because he's got all of that going around up there.
Oh,
well,
Paul,
I have to tell you this, which is, I've actually created a class called Everything You Need to Know About Life You Can Learn from a Broadway Musical.
Uh-huh.
And I introduced the class to songs starting from musicals in the 20s up to current day, and what
yes.
life lessons they have to choose us, have to show us.
Wow.
So,
that's
yeah.
nice.
When, how yeah. often do they meet?
Well, I have to offer the class again. It's not live right now.
You really should do it in Concord. There's an enormous contingent of people starved for anything like that.
Well, maybe I should get you to come in and teach the class with me, Paul.
Oh!
Can I audit?
I sounded like I was passing a kidney stone, but I didn't mean to. No, I meant, what a wonderful idea.
Love it.
So I do want to defer to Miss Laurie for a moment to see, because before we eat this whole thing up,
yes.
like it's Mae West eating a cake.
Oh.
I want to see what questions Laurie might have, because if we don't make space for her to ask them, the whole show, at the end of the show, I'll get somebody to say, yeah, listen to the show. Laurie laughs great.
Yeah. All right. Well, certainly. Yes.
I am loving all of this. And yes, I highly support you two doing that class together. Yes, I want to audit it.
All right. I guarantee those who attend would have a wonderful time. I mean, in between all of the frivolity and fun, they would come away with a lot of knowledge or curiosity about a lot of shows that they might not have had, you know, when they went in. Now, back in 1982, most people didn't know about Chicago. This was 20 years before the film. This was years before it was revived on Broadway. And it had been on Broadway in 1975. And so it was just, you know, a real awakening into that whole area, and that's what, you know, learning should be fun. It really should be. The nuns never thought that. The nuns never thought fun belonged in the classroom, but it has a very important place. But anyway, before I digress, Laurie, did you have any questions or comments you'd like to make?
Well, I don't know if I have any questions, but I have to say I am thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying this interview. I think you guys are spectacular together. And Dr. Kevin knows I adore working with him. We've done television, do radio. I just cannot wait to meet you in person.
Well, thank you. Likewise, I certainly agree. I mean, for years I thought Kevin and I should bring vaudeville back or something and hit the road. Not the way that some people say, okay, hit the road. But, I mean, hit the road and play theaters all over the country and delight them with our impromptu, because that's what it all is. I think if we ever tried to lay it all out and plan it, it wouldn't work. It's the spontaneity thing and playing off of one another that makes that it's like a tennis game back and forth. And that's what, you know, I think that's one of the reasons Kevin has become so enormously successful. He thinks on his feet. He's very quick. You know, very rarely can you, you know, he's at a loss for words, and he can handle just about any kind of situation, whatever's thrown at him. So that's what is really nice. And so both of us had a similar attitude about that. And so it was, I put myself in the Brattleboro retreat at one time when I had a breakdown, and Kevin came to see me when I had my breakdown at Dartmouth Hitchcock in 86. He would regularly come over to my padded room and undo my what do they have me in? Whatever it was. But anyway, But that was it. Yeah, once again, that was the only straight thing about me. But he would loosen it a little bit. And periodically, he was working at a wonderful place called Molly's Balloon up in Hanover. And they loved him there. It was the exact same thing. The staff cared more about him than the management. But true. And certainly the cook cared more about you than doing the cooking he was doing, because the food coming out wasn't always very good. But
well, you know, you always want to do something half baked to somebody who's half baked, because then the two have come together.
Well,
Polly, I want to ask you.
Yes.
I thank
Is this
you so
food
much.
For thought?
Food for something.
Yes.
I do want to. I want to comment that when you said that, you know, because I was going to ask you, I noticed that my name was absent from the book.
Yes.
But, you know, when you said that, you know, that it was taken out, I thought you were going to say you were going to put me in the next book, The Park, that I was going to be one of the bodies they found.
Except you weren't born in 1962, so you couldn't be there. So unless in a previous life you were one of the ducks in the pond.
Well,
I mean,
God
I don't
knows,
think
I've traveled with some quacks.
But you've never really been a sitting duck, so.
No, standing is more my style. So.
Yes. Oh.
Anyways, but so, Polly, I want to know. So first of all, I want to know when you're going to put your hand to romance.
Ooh.
Put my hand to romance?
Yes.
Writing a. Novel.
Oh, write a romance novel. Oh, like Barbara Cartland or somebody like that. You mean a period romance novel that takes place like hundreds of years ago, or a more contemporary romance?
Well, I mean, in the case of your history, both would qualify, but no, I'm serious. Is that you know, as Lori knows, I'm actually involved in this project right now called 1,000 Loving Voices,
uh-huh.
And I'm writing an LGBTQIA romance novel, mainstream
Are
romance
you?
Novel. Yes. And
oh,
so
I love that.
We're looking for other LGBTQIA romance writers. We want to launch 1,000 books over like a 6 or 9 month period to libraries around the world and things
uh-huh.
like this to bring up a more of a normalization of, you know, romance
yes.
is romance. So the characters are like whatever the characters are. And I was like,
two males or two females or, you know, something else. Yes, exactly.
A squirrel and a blackbird.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
But you would be, yeah, I mean, let's let Lori into the other little part of that. Back
okay.
in one of the things that in 1982, 83, 84 is the other thing, the only thing that outshined Paul's and my ability to sing show tunes was our ability to be dramatically loving and like, you know, like high drama. I mean, you know, we didn't do low drama, Paul. We did high drama.
Never
we all Meryl Streep. No, I know. No, really. I think we both reveled in the growing freedom that gay people were starting to feel before AIDS set everything back so much. But, I mean, it was 12, 13 years after Stonewall. People were a little more welcoming. I mean, there were several gay clubs. There was the Depressed Club, the Club Continental, and all.
The 484.
Yep. So there was more of an acceptance, even if everyone wasn't overwhelmingly enthused, like, oh, yeah, let's bring on the gays. There was still. But more people were, oh, just let everyone be themselves. And so I think both of us reveled in that kind of new freedom and the ability to be more ourselves and to burst into song or to, you know, any of the other things that went on. And definitely, I think. And then I think AIDS did play a role in changing public perception, not for the best for a while, but in those early years of the AIDS, when I first knew you, there was a sense of madcap mischief almost, you know, very MAME kind of, you know, life's a banquet and most poor sons of bitches are starving, that kind of.
Yep.
And you know... You were adorable looking. I was okay looking. I was clean. So
Stop it.
No, I mean, you were the gorgeous blonde bombshell with the blue eyes. And truly, I mean,
you know, the funny thing is we are closer to MAME now, and back then, if you think about it, we really were more like Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Very much so, yes. As long as I don't have to be Mary Tyler Moore.
You'd rather Dick Van Dyke?
Only part of him. I would rather be the Carol Channing character in Thoroughly Modern. Why, yes, I would love to be my raspberry.
Berry.
But no, we were. But I don't think we realized how young, and I mean, there wasn't a sense of, I don't know, I never felt, because my thoughts and my mindset and my things I liked, I remember when I took you in D.C. down to Boston when I was speaking at the Boston Public Library film showings. Now, I was right at home down there with all of the folks who were there watching the Jeanette MacDonald Nelson Eddy film, and I could... They were old enough to be my grandparents, but I could relate to all of that more than I could relate to some of the other things. But being around you, you were the best of both worlds because you could be silly and giddy and youth personified. Isn't that from Thoroughly Modern Millie? And
yes.
And yet you
knew.
When I said, I've got to speak at the Boston Public Library, blah, 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 you knew who I was talking about and all of that. And so that was, you had that wonderful balance between the multiple eras, which are not E-R-R-O-R-S, but E-R-A-S. And that was one of the things that always intrigued me about you was that you, in some ways, you could be so much older than you were in the wisdom you would impart sometimes to people. And then in other ways, you were just this little, you know, wind-up toy that was just all over the place.
Well, and, you know, for all of his talk, Lori, Paul... Oh. Paul was very naive in a lot of ways.
Yes.
He was. And we'll be back to talk about his nativity scene with Donna Summers, Barbara Streisand, and Diana Ross here on The Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Time. We are here on the last Thursday of the month, which means next week I will be on with Matt Connerton, where we take Matt Connerton, unleash him, and we talk about the politics and of the day and the things going on in the world. And we all know it's just been so dull and boring lately. I don't know what Matt and I will talk about, but you're going to have to tune in next week if you would like to be part of that conversation. To be part of this conversation, you can call in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. Ask your questions. Tonight's guest is Paul Brogan. Paul is an award-winning author. He started with Drop That Name. I think I just screwed up the title of your first book.
Yes. Was that a name I dropped?
Was that a name I dropped? There we go. But and we are talking about his we are talking about his latest book, which is Sprinkling Stardust Over the Outhouse. A sprinkling of stardust over the outhouse. We don't want you to think he was throwing a whole bag of glitter, okay? So a sprinkling over the outhouse. And his wonderfully kooky celebrity rich, also dark and disturbing life as a gay man in the 1920s and 30s in Concord, New Hampshire. Did I get the years right?
but danced a mean Charleston.
There you go.
We danced a Charleston together, Paul.
Yeah, did we ever do the tapioca together? Tap, 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 tapioca. Everybody. Well, sorry. That was girly, wasn't it? Okay.
Down on your toes.
There goes my butchness.
Oh, honey, if you could find your butchness, it would be an antique. Who are you kidding?
It's somewhere here. Before the break, you were mentioning about naivety and all of that, and you are right about that because you were much more worldly wise than me because I had gone into a relationship, lived in Hillsborough, New Hampshire, and was involved for almost 6 years and never made it to the big city of Manchester very often. So I, you know, didn't have, anyway, you taught me things. About the world in general, of course. And so you were
there.
Yes. You were much more, in touch with what was going on in that period of the early 80s, after disco had sort of faded away, but, you know, Olivia Newton-John was doing Physical and Sheena Easton was doing My Baby Takes the Morning Train and all those different things that we were all dancing to at the different clubs. And it was. I mean, I felt a little bit out of water because everybody else, you know, hadn't had that break of 6 years in which they basically sat in Hillsborough, New Hampshire, except for the evenings when I went into the Concord Theater to work. So I had missed a whole part of the gay lifestyle after having come out publicly, more than at age 10. I couldn't do much at age 10 except announce I was marrying my best friend and ruining Thanksgiving for my parents. But my mother remembers it the other day. She'll be 99 in December, and she mentioned to me the other day, are we going to be doing anything this Thanksgiving? And I said, oh, I'm not sure. Alan will probably cook. She says, well, as long as you don't do again what you did when you were 10.
Mom.
Thank you, Mom.
Mom, Moms don't forget. But, you know, I want to say about Paul is I remember, and it's very interesting because, you know, Paul is a few months or a decade or two older than I am. is the fact that I remember very clearly meeting Paul and feeling very, very protective over him because of his naivety. Like, he was like this, world-aware moviegoer. Like, he saw the lens. You saw the lens through theater, and you went on, you know, in movies, and you went on to see it through several celebrities' eyes who are all in the book that you knew and came to become good friends with, like Carol Channing and Doris Day and, you know, but stuff like this. But I always remember feeling protective over you when I first met you, and would always feel like he was somebody I had to keep an eye on because people were going to take advantage of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the initiating bonds, was I could see that in his naivete, he could be a bit of a rube.
Yes. And that you got me to stop wearing that T-shirt that said on it, "Use me, please." And you made me throw that away. So,
but yeah, and let's not forget. I mean, and I never shy away from the fact I started going to the gay bars in downtown Boston at 14.
Wow. Wow. I think I knew that. I think you had told me, but I don't think it resonated as much until right now. Wow.
You know, so you have a section in your book about how you talk about fresh meat, and just because I want to mention, because I actually, in the book that I'm, the romance that I'm writing right now, the two characters are born in 56. So their backdrop is
very similar to mine.
Yeah.
The period of time, yes.
Yeah, you know, and because I came out, because I started going to the bar so young, even though you're a little older, we had a similar period of bar time, come out, music, blah, blah, blah. And we're both very theater drawn and, you know, like the little Noel Coward and like to, you know.
Yes.
Have a.
And going to Napoleon's was such fun, not just because I would be the youngest one at the piano bar and it made me feel very good, but because just there was a camaraderie around a piano that was different then. And that's, by starting out at gay bars, going to places like that, I don't think I was prepared for the reality of going to a bar where, oh, no, there's no piano. Oh, you're obviously here for one thing and one thing alone, as opposed to sitting around the piano with a dozen other people and singing songs, you know, until they closed. And that was, that's one of the things that I think is really missing, and it's unfortunate that there isn't the same type of camaraderie around piano bars. Certain piano bars now seem to only want to spotlight particular people that go there, and everyone else sits around the piano listening to that person sing. But there isn't a group of people singing all together. And that was, you know, that's too bad because, you know, I stopped going to some places years ago because it would be all about, okay, what do you want to sing now? And then that person 2 hours later was still singing the songs that they wanted to, but there was no interaction or request of anyone else sitting around the piano bar as to what would you like to hear or what can we all sing together or something. So that was,
I do remember an occasion or two, Paul, of one of us or one and a half of us sprawling on the top of the piano when we were singing.
Yes, you were very good at that because you looked adorable on top of a black piano. Much better with my coloring, my brown eyes, my brown dark brown hair. I would just get lost, and they would think I was just an ornament that was part of the piano when it was built. Whereas with your blonde hair and the blue eyes, you stood out and sprawled out there. You know, was a great allure, a great lure for people to come over and check out the piano.
You helped me up on my first piano when I sang
Paul Brogan. Yes, I did. I'm only sorry that I wasn't the pianist that night. That would have been very nice. But yes, I did help you up there. Got you positioned in the way that would be most effective.
Lori's going. Okay, this is 2MI. TMI. We're talking about a piano bar and gun quit.
Yeah, it's not though. You worked at the Beechcrest when I was playing the piano there, briefly. Except the piano hadn't been tuned since my third birthday in 1923, so it was just horribly off key, and it was just... I would sit there and play because Lily Andrews, that owned the place, wanted a pianist and be able to advertise, but there were like 14 notes that I would have been better off bringing in one of those little children's toy pianos. I probably, you know, would have been able to play more than there was with that, but it adds something, live piano music and people making requests and, you know, just for environment that you don't get with Muzak or, you know, any of the other things.
Yeah, I always found it amazing at the Beached Whale how she never had, you know, like she wanted a piano, but she was so tone deaf that she couldn't tell that it didn't play. But
even after 7 or 8 drinks, she couldn't tell.
I think it was her Cruella de Vil imitation that got in the way.
Yes, absolutely. and I would play that when she would come in. I would play Cruella de Vil, Cruella. But she couldn't recognize. I don't think she'd ever seen the movie. I don't think she'd ever seen anything happy in her life. And with that piano so out of tune, it didn't really sound like the seductive Cruella de Vil that you wanted it to. So it was a lost cause, but I would still play it because it made me happy, and I felt that I was, you know.
Yeah. And I'd laugh every time.
You would.
I knew what you were playing.
No matter what table you might be at, I would look over and you would respond exactly as you were supposed to respond. Perfect. It was as though we had planned it out.
So before this show ends,
yes.
I would like you to, because you have a ton of stuff in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And where can they find the book?
Barnes & Noble online, Amazon online, Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. It's also available as an e-book through Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
So make sure you check out this latest book if you're somebody who wants to know the dirt and the scoop and also get an insight to what was it like for gay people in New England in the 1860s, the 70s, the 80s?
Well, so many of the men were drafted into the Civil War in 1860, so there was a lull there when I was about 18 or 19, where I was about the only one that wasn't serving.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes.
Served.
Right. I was going to say. I think you walking around with that little machine that said, take a number, please, was a dead giveaway, Paul. What do you think is the most hidden, surprising gem in the book? We're almost out of time. I do want to let people know. Remember,
the most hidden, surprising gem in the book. I don't know. Maybe that I Okay, as a little child, I saw Old Yeller and thought that the guy that played the older brother, Tommy Kirk, was adorable. And 10 years later, he picked me up at the French Marketplace in West Hollywood.
All righty.
Oh my. All righty then. And another.
He had good taste.
Obviously.
And another generation of little girls that see Old Yeller will have their fantasies destroyed.
Next time they see Swiss Family Robinson and they see him up there without his shirt on and they're drooling, they'll know, oh, my God, Paul did more than that. Okay,
well,
anyway.
You know what they always say, the best ones. All the best ones. So, Paul.
Thank you.
Do you have any upcoming events? Any book signings?
Nothing.
Any street corners?
not at the moment. I don't. I will. I'm sure at some point people can friend me on Facebook if they want, and they'll find out about anything that is coming up. I'm not the only Paul Brogan. I'm friends with the other Paul Brogan, but I'm the Paul Brogan in Concord, New Hampshire. So the other one's in Los Angeles. But anyway,
so Paul, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you both. It's been a treat and a pleasure, and I love you both, and I'll look forward to seeing you in person soon, okay?
Okay. Give my best to Alan.
Thank you. And best to Jeffrey. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.